something new. That system is our enemy. When you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters, the very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it.
All right. How's the audio?
Oh, you sound good. On my end.
How you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing pretty good considering. So you and I had a brief back and forth through Facebook Messenger. And you was just giving me a little bit of your personal philosophy.
That's right.
Why don't you debrief the audience a little bit on that, and then we can go from there.
My personal philosophy on what we talking? I mean, on what exactly?
On race and entitlements. That's what we're supposed to be talking about.
Actually, I think race is insignificant. I'm a firm believer that race typically is insignificant. However, I do believe that stereotypes exist for a reason. That's both white and black. But entitlements is something I'm very passionate about because, well, I'm a taxpayer. So I do not like for anyone, black or white, to receive any, let's just call it donations from me without me volunteering them. Does that make sense?
Let's back up a little bit. You say you think race is insignificant. Right. So what you're saying is that America is a race neutral country. Race is insignificant.
And from my end, I think it's only significant from people that I think it's only significant to people that believe that their failures or lack of success is caused by the color of their skin, or that could be anybody, black. It could be anybody. You know, there's some people that, even from my end on the white side, that believe there is a conspiracy against white people in America to depopulate us. So I feel the exact same way towards them that use race as a crutch for their lack of success.
Mm. Okay. So, but I think you're making a false equivalency there by equating white people's sense of ambivalence that stems from their race and what we know as white decline to black people's sense of ambivalence, because black people's mistreatment based on race is historical, it's factual, and it's ingrained in the very fabric of American society. So those two things are two different things. That's a false equivalency.
No, I agree that there's a very ugly past in America in regards to race. But I also am a believer that majority of that past has been we've gotten past that past. Now, not everybody's going to believe that. Not everybody's going to feel that same way. But I'm going to say this, and I'm very stern about this. I 100% do not believe that oppression exists in any aspect at all. I do not believe that anyone holds you down. And even if I did decide that I did not want to hire you, Mary, because you're black, that's my right. I bought, purchased, and built my company. If I decide I only want to hire big booty, I'm going to try not to curse, a blonde broads, then that should be my prerogative, since it's my money that built the business that I created and my hard work.
Right. But here's the larger thing. Your business can't thrive or be successful if the government doesn't do its job. So, for example, if the government doesn't take care of its roads, its bridges, its infrastructure, then your business can't thrive and be successful. So in that sense, we all have a certain responsibility to the greater collective, because if the government doesn't do what it's doing, then you can't operate. And just like you said, you don't want somebody benefiting from your taxes turning into a donation. I don't want the same thing then. You see what I'm saying? Because it's my taxes that's going to the government, making it possible for the infrastructure to operate that's helping your business to be successful.
Well, let me say this. First of all, prior to taxation, income taxation, which I believe taxation is theft, period, because we don't pay taxes. Majority of Americans do not pay taxes. I do, but majority of Americans have taxes taken from them. So ultimately, my thing of this is, how did businesses exist or prosper prior to taxation? So the taxation that exists now, you cannot say that businesses that are successful now are successful due to regulation and taxation when there were successful businesses prior to regulation and taxation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but that's a different thing, because I think it was I can't remember the name of the president who started the interstate highway, interstate highway system. Prior to that, everything was more localized. This is where we get the differences between states' rights and the larger federal government. Initially, the federal government's role in domestic issues was very minuscule and minute. Their mandate was to do those things for the states that the states couldn't do for themselves. So that was the creation of borders, protecting the borders, and dealing in international treaties, and to help those businesses export their goods out to foreign markets. That was the whole purpose of the federal government. What you're mentioning now, like how we get the taxes now, is income taxes and then payroll taxes. Now the payroll taxes, that is the taxes that go towards what we know of as entitlement. So that's the Medicare, Medicaid, and social security. You see, so ultimately, again, if the government doesn't operate and do what it's supposed to do in a modernized society, in an integrated industrialized society, those businesses cannot function and operate. Like, you wouldn't have multi-conglomerate corporations in this day and age if there was no NTSB, if there was no air traffic control system. You see what I'm saying? If there was no, who's supposed to regulate the air traffic? If government doesn't operate, those businesses, they're going to be much less likely to be as successful as they are if the government isn't operating, doing what it's supposed to do.
No, here's the thing. Just because I think taxation is theft does not mean that I do not understand why it exists. But right. in terms of entitlements, my firm belief is that if you give humanity, and it doesn't matter, once again, the color of the person, of the human, if you give humanity an option of a way out of working to eat, people will take it. You know, I'm going to be honest, man. You know, I wasn't always conservative. You know, I was raised on the south side of Chicago, and right. I was, you know, basically, you know, the deal. Get what you can get.
Right.
And so I used to have that mentality. And once I became a harder worker, even before I became conservative per se, I started noticing that there was a lot of people that was able to stay at home and basically let the government take care of them while they incarcerate their men, while they basically do nothing. And they were eating better than me. Mm-hmm. And I was working 40 hours a week. And that was at the moment that I realized the entitlement system is broken. Mm-hmm. We're not giving it to people that genuinely just need it. Veterans, truly disabled people. We got women that are claiming to be bipolar, or not just women, but people claiming to be bipolar. And just because they have mood swings, now we're giving them a check. And then not just that, we have women, like I said, that are incentivized. There's incentives given for them to put their men out of their homes because we're giving them Section 8 projects. And you know how it goes. Well, I don't know if you know how it goes. I'm not going to make that assumption that you can't have a man there. So Section 8 homes. We're giving them that, and we're giving them food stamps, and we're giving them welfare, which a lot of times is more than their skill level would have earned them at a 9-to-5. So what incentive do they have to actually go work? That's my problem with entitlements for the most part, particularly in that area.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Do you have any empirical data to back up what you just suggested, the statement you just made? Because when I look at the information and the data that's available, what I'm seeing is that most women who are on welfare or food stamps or whatever you want to call it, most of these women are working. I mean, this is the reason why we did the Welfare Reform Act in the 90s under the Clintons, exactly because of what you're talking about. And, you know, now in today's time, most women who are on welfare work.
Well,
they're working mothers.
Sometimes. But only about 6% of the people that are on welfare work full time. Now, some of that is not their fault. I will grant you that right. Sometimes in today's climate, jobs will cut you down to 35 hours so they don't have to pay you health insurance, offer you health insurance. I get that. But only about 6% of people that get entitlements work 40 hours or more. And then also we live in a nation where 108 million people get some sort of entitlement, but there's only 101 million full-time employees. That is a problem. That's an unsustainable pace. There's no way. And once again, I'm not saying that the entire 108 million are welfare queens. Some of those people are older people that are disabled people, whatever. So not all entitlement receivers are doing it maliciously or just being lazy. I'm aware of that. But either way, in the grand scheme of things, there's a lot of people taking advantage of this, in my opinion. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Like even when we get to entitlement spending, the largest driver of entitlement costs is actually the health side. So when we start talking about Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, this is dealing with the elderly, with the sickly or people who are obese. Obesity is the greatest driver of the problem we're having with the entitlements, because obesity is a drain on the economy because of the health effects, the health costs. America is one of the fattest nations on the planet. And see, this again goes back to the cyclical nature of government, business, and the people. Because if we have corporations who process foods and overprocess foods with sugar, preservatives, salts, these things that make people unhealthy, and then we sell those products cheaper than what we sell healthier products. The healthier foods are way more expensive than the cheaper foods. Then what you're going to have is you're going to have a population of individuals who are sickly because they're eating the cheaper foods that the corporation is selling in the interest of making a profit. And then that's going to come back on the entitlement programs in the government, because now these people have health issues. So again, it's going to come back to Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. But one thing I do want to mention, how this idea of what we call entitlements, because the fact is that these aren't entitlements, because the American people are paying money into this system. We are much less, but most, if it doesn't matter, if a person is working a job, even regardless of the hours they get, they're still paying into the system. This is an entirely different thing from income taxes. Income taxes is what people can choose to be exempt from, and you use exemptions to drive down their rate of what they're paying. But the payroll taxes for the payroll taxes are fixed. If you work a job, you're going to pay payroll tax. Like my daughter, she works for a fast food company. Right. And when she looks at her check stub, they're taking money out of her check. So yep. she's paying into the system. So what I'm saying is this idea or this notion that there's this undeserving population or segment of people who particularly are Black that's robbing money from the system is a racist trope and stereotype. And that was something that was concocted and created in the late 60s and the early 70s as a way to vilify poor people. Like, look, even when we talk about employability, let's be honest, the unemployment rate that they talk about on the news and that they give you when they cook their books isn't the real unemployment rate. If you go into a lot of these communities, you have some communities where the unemployment rate of black men is double digit, like Milwaukee, like Detroit, places in Indiana. So it's just going to create this type of quagmire. Now, what you mentioned earlier, and this is what I'll say, I think it's asinine to assert that people are choosing to be poor to get welfare. That's analogous to asserting that people are choosing to get sick to get Medicare and Medicaid. It's an entire system of imbalance, because this is the type of things that arise when you have a capitalist system and where you elevate dollars over principle.
Well, and I let me first off say that I agree with you about the health of our nation. Right. I actually agree with you completely 100% on that concept. And I do believe it affects entitlements. However,
right.
My position here is going to be, it's still a choice. Those people can budget the more expensive health items.
Right.
Being fat, I know this because I am fat. Being fat is a choice. Right. I choose to do the things that make me fat, but it does not mean that you nor anyone else should have to foot the bill if my fatness makes me sick and puts me in the hospital. It's my responsibility. Therefore, you know, when that bill comes, I should get it, not you, not the rest of the taxpayers. Now, when it comes to unemployment, I don't believe a whole lot of numbers anyway, right? Like, I don't. I think that majority of the numbers, no matter who you get it from, is to help benefit their agenda. So if I get, let's say, numbers from CNN, it is to benefit the liberal agenda. If I get numbers from Fox News, it is to benefit their agenda. So the only thing you can look at is the numbers that the government presents, and even that is to benefit their agenda. So numbers is, you know, pretty much subjective if you want to believe them or not.
Right.
But ultimately, my thing about this is I do not believe an attack on welfare is an attack on black people. And even if that was the case, even if we were to say right now that white people do not want their tax money to go to feed black children.
Right.
Even though that you can say that's mean, and yes, that would be racist, but it's a valid argument. Even if that was the situation, but I don't think that I don't look at it and say that the attack that I or anyone else makes on entitlements is an attack against black people or any minorities, because now I know that the numbers, which we just said is subjective, shows that 44% of black households are on an entitlement while only 13% of white households. Now, don't get me wrong, that 13% of white households is still a bigger number.
Right.
It is. But however, I think the bigger epidemic is the fact that almost half of black households are on an entitlement, while the majority of the working people in America are not black. Because of the faith, I mean, at 12.4% of the nation, if you believe that number, once again, numbers are subjective. Listen, you're not putting a lot into the mix if there's a lot of you locked up, whether it's the oppression thing that's claimed or the real crimes or whatever the case may be. Black taxpayers are not putting in a whole lot. And so for the half of their households almost to receive an entitlement is an epidemic. There's a problem if you believe that number. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you believe that it is 44%? Do you believe the numbers I presented?
Go ahead. Well,
and do you believe it's an issue, basically?
No, I don't, because when I'm a black person, and when I look around and when I look at my people, I see people who are hardworking. I see people who are trying to do the best they can. I see people who want a better life, you know, for their children. And a lot of time it's the environment that's causing a lot of things and a lot of issues that may exist in certain of our communities. But one thing I do want to talk about, because you mentioned, you know, the rates relative to who's getting entitlements, it being nearly half of all Black households, and it's what, only 13% of white households. But we can see, we can trace this back and see, this is how we opened up the conversation when we talk about the racialized past of American history. See, if you've studied the Civil War and Reconstruction, then you know that once they emancipated the slaves from off the plantation, they didn't give them an economic base or an economic floor. They made certain concessions. They started certain things, the Freedmen's Bank, and things like that. But because of Jim Crow and the resurgence of the repatriating segregationists, a lot of those things were stymied and neutralized. And that's what ushered us into Jim Crow. And so, see, this is a cumulative effect of how Black people get to where we are now. When you maldistribute resources based on the lines of race to disproportionately ingratiate one racial group of the country to the economic pie, well, then it's going to have an effect on the disadvantaged racial group. And this is the history in America. See, this is what has happened. And every time when America has been presented with the opportunity to make retribution and reparations to Black people, there's always an excuse. There's always this vilification of Black people. And there's always this abstinence coming from the larger white society. If you look at Gallup polls from the 1960s, mm-hmm. when asked if when the Gallup poll asked, you know, white people surveys on questions like, do you think Black people are treated unfairly in this country? Do you think Black people get a raw deal with education? Do you think Black people get a raw deal with housing? Many times the majority of those surveyed would say no. So this speaks to this willful ignorance, or just basically ignoring the issues that Black people have dealt with in this country. And despite all of that, look at what we are, at where we are and what we've accomplished. However, that doesn't translate to the entire group or collective of Black people. There are still issues that are systemic issues, right, institutionalized issues, because it's inertia. An object in motion will remain in that motion until it's acted upon by an outside force. But then those forces that was moving in that initial direction will still have an effect on its movement. And that's where we are today.
Can I ask you?
Go ahead.
I want to ask you two things. Three things, actually. The question one, I'm going to ask all three and then you can nail them. Question number one is going to be, do you think we owe you reparations? And the question number two is going to be about the appearance of Black folks. We talk about a lot when it comes to their poverty, but when we talk about the appearance that they present to other people, not just out there, but if you look at television, the image that they want to represent, and a lot of us, and I don't know if you're liberal or conservative, but I know a lot of Black men wearing suits and I have a lot of Black people in my audience that are stand up, excellent people. However, there's a lot of people that will come into a job interview, and I know this. I used to run a business in which I hired these people. They would come in there dressed just as urban as I do on a damn corner or anyone else does, and with their hat cocked, and think that they're going to get hired. And then when we don't hire them, it's because they're Black. No, it's because we assume, based on your appearance, that you're into thuggery or the street life. So ultimately, I want to ask you, is it possibly the image that blacks present to the public, American public themselves, that could possibly be stunting their growth in terms of economically? But then ultimately, this is the entitlement culture. It's essentially a handout, and they're saying, well, you owe me, and I demand fairness. I don't believe anything in life is fair. You know, when I finally stopped being a jackass, and stepped into the work field, and, you know, I have teardrops on my face, and I still dress pretty urban. And despite being white, it does not... There's a lot, and I have three felonies. I couldn't look at jobs and say it's unfair that you're not going to give me an opportunity. I just had to lace my boots up, start my own business, and become successful. So basically, my question is, what part of black poverty do you actually blame on black people? Do you think we owe them reparations? And do you think that maybe the imagery that they put out to the public could be a reason that people are not, you know, not so likely to bring them into their company or to do business with them?
Right. Let me address this. Number one, yes, I do believe that black people are owed reparations. That's number one. Number two, what part of black poverty do I blame on black people? I will assign some responsibility to those of us who may not be doing as well, because it's always a twofold situation. The social scientists who've looked at this, they talk about how that it's both structural and behavioral inhibitors. So there is something to be said about some of the behaviors that some of us engage in. The larger point is this: the fact that as black people, we have to go into white institutions looking for employment and looking for jobs, and then being subject to the stigmas that arise from how we're portrayed in the media speaks to the underlying problem here. And it goes right back to the legacy that you and I both understand and that I've laid out. If we had our own institutions, our own banks, our own corporations that we actually ran and controlled, then those things wouldn't be as much of an inhibitor to brothers and sisters as it is when it's a white institution. Because the fact is that we have two different cultures in American society. There's white culture and there's black culture. But the stance that always comes from the dominant society is somehow portraying black culture as degenerate, inherently criminal, lazy, entitled. See these different things, when the fact is that that's not true. Now, just check this out. If a white guy came into a business with, with some cowboy jeans on, some cowboy boots, a cowboy hat, a lasso, and these different things, you wouldn't be like, okay, well, I'm not going to hire him. Hold on. Let me finish the point. You wouldn't be like, hold on, I'm not going to hire him because he might shoot somebody at noon because he's dressed like a cowboy. You'll understand that the depiction of how that's portrayed in the media is not necessarily representative of the reality. And this is what happens with brothers and sisters. Like, this is the way we're portrayed in the media, of being criminal, of being thugs, drug dealers, when really all it is just it's urban style and urban culture. Like, it's a urban thing to have, you know, your hat backwards. That's just flavor, you know, pizzazz or whatever it is. It's not really indicative of some type of criminal who might do something. And so, you know, you don't want to hire them. You see what I mean? So right. That's where I stand on that. But go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. And that, I understand what you're saying, but what if no one wants to hire flavor and pizzazz? Maybe we don't want that in our place of business. But number two, let me ask you this. Can you blame a little bit of that on black folks? And here's my reason why. The cowboy hats, like, I don't see country stars like making videos talking about the violence they would do to another person. Let's be honest here. Yes, I admit media companies are typically ran by white people. However, it still takes the black people to say, yes, I agree to go on there and look like Tekashi 6ix9ine and portray this gangster that's going to kill other people. That's the difference, is the imagery that blacks accept to be put forward in representation of themselves is a violent, hardcore gangster rap type imagery, whereas them cowboys are hard. The imagery that they allowed to be put out for them is of the hardworking cattle rancher, not necessarily going to shoot up other cowboys. I mean, I don't remember a single song where Garth Brooks threatened to pull a 187 on an undercover cop. Let's go ahead.
All right. Dang, I lost my train of thought with that, but you know, again, we're operating in stereotypes here. We have to understand that's entertainment. It's like wrestling. Who that WCW, Vince McMahon. But the point is that you know, these things have been racialized. And look, let's talk about how labor unions early on. See, there's always, see, we exist in a continuum of this. So the dominant society, the dominant class, always looks for a reason or a pretext to push black people, particularly black men, to the margins. So we get the minimum wage. The way we get minimum wage in American society is because they wanted to price black men out of the labor market. Prior to the enactment of the minimum wage, many black men were being employed at a higher rate than white men because they would do the work for cheaper. They were cheaper labor. So then the labor unions instituted the minimum wage to give a base so brothers could know, black men couldn't undercut those white workers. See, this is the history of racialized union politics in American society. And last time I checked, during this time period, which was the early 1900s, there was no brothers running around talking about pulling the 187. There were no brothers running around with their hat on backwards. There was no brothers running around making rap videos talking about how they'll kill someone. It's always about race. Yeah. We just fit it into whatever filter we can fit it into to hide our racialized animus. Like, check this out, and then I'll let you go on. White ambivalence to black achievement is factual, historical, and institutional in the social historiography of American society. That's just what it is.
Okay. And so let's just say it's the absolute worst, right? Let's just say white people don't care. White people are, you know, they don't recognize your achievement, and they just don't care. Let's just say that is the truth. Why is that such a problem, number one? Because it sounds to me like we're begging for white acceptance. That's number one. But number two, I'm going to say that I do want to touch on the reparations thing. Because my ultimate question to you, just to start off, is why should people that do not own slaves pay people that weren't slaves? Nobody on this earth is a slave owner. No one here, excuse me, that's an inaccurate statement. No one here in America are slave owners or slaves. So why, well, like, for instance, why should I pay you? And maybe I'm not even a descendant. I am a descendant of a slave owner, but there's many white owners that's not, white people that's not. And what about the people? What about mixed people? Like Barack Obama, let's just use Barack Obama. Should he get reparations? What? Should his mama pay his daddy? Like, who should pay who? You see what I'm saying? That would be my question in regards to that. But go ahead.
Yeah, look, reparations isn't just about slavery. It's about the entire context in which Anglo-America has mistreated, dehumanized, marginalized black people. That's what it's about. Slavery
mean to you, we owe you because we were mean to you, bro. Is that what you're really saying right now?
You call it what you want. Whether we're talking about slavery, whether we're talking about Jim Crow, whether we're talking about mass incarceration, it's not just being mean, it's maldistribution of resources where you take the resources and you hoard them for you and you hoard it for yourselves. And then you lock all of these, like, you know, like Black people have been systemically locked out of industries. You see what I'm saying? Like they've been locked out of industries by the dominant class, by the dominant society, where they would use eminent domain laws to tear up thriving Black areas.
So
you see what I mean? Like
I do see what you mean.
There's an economic. So what I'm saying is that this is just as much economic as it is racial. So that's what I'm saying. It's not just racial, it's economic as well. There's an economic train here that we can follow and see why 44% of Black households are on some type of entitlement, while only 13% are.
So essentially, it was white people were not sharing enough with their resources. Because let's not mistake mm-hmm. this. We engaged in what's called conquest in a time where in worldwide conquest was thing. We took this from someone else. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, basically, the problem is we're not sharing enough of our resources with Black people. That's really the problem.
Well, hold on. Look, because this is something I talk about all the time, is that white men didn't do anything in a vacuum. When you talk about Christopher Columbus getting over here, there were Moors on Christopher Columbus' ship. There were Africans that was with Christopher Columbus. When we talk about how America came to be, the first blood shed on this land for America, what would become America, was a Black man, an ex-slave, Crispus Attucks. See, so that's what I'm saying. White men or white people haven't done anything in a vacuum. If there's this supposed conquest that was going on, well, you shouldn't have needed anybody's help. You shouldn't have had to go to Africa to get slaves to come and work the land and the crops in America. You should have been able to do that yourself, but they weren't. And so even how, you know, America came to be and America got all of this mass wealth, it just didn't materialize out of anywhere. Much of the corporations that exist today got their start in money that was created from human trafficking and from forced slave labor, and they've never paid reparations.
Which is only considered wrong today. You got to realize it was not considered. You can't change a law and then retroactively go back and punish people that broke that law that broke that law before that law was illegal. So what I mean is that they could say tomorrow that coffee is illegal. You can't go back in time and punish me for all the pots of coffee I've drank. So, yes, I understand slavery and the concept of it is wrong today. But back then, we was getting y'all for $40 a pop. That was a good deal, bro. And listen, most people's going to take that. You know, if you can get someone to come in your house and all you got to do is pay someone else $40. You come in my house, you're going to fold my drawers, you're going to do all of this. Your women are going to sneak into our bedrooms at night and give us fellatio. I'm doing a good job controlling this cussing, by the way. We can do all of those things for a small price of $40, and it's not illegal, and everyone's doing it all around the world. Who wouldn't do that?
Then America has to come to face the truth about itself, then, because we're not the ones who are saying we're a nation of laws. We're not the ones who's talking about being civil. We're not the ones who's talking about being the moral police. We're not the ones who have a Statue of Liberty in the New York Harbor, right, serving as a beacon for light and freedom for the planet, and who've pushed this idea of democracy. See, they did all that. You see, and so you can't make the argument, this convenient argument of, well, it wasn't this at that time, because now the bill has come due. Live up to the meaning of what you said. You said, we the people. The founding documents of this country say we the people.
Yes.
And when you have white men, particularly elitist white men, who are harboring all of the occupying all of the institutions, the apparatuses of control, the government, what you're implying by default is that everybody else aren't people. They're not persons. They're not humans, and they don't have those certain inalienable rights. So if the line of reasoning that you're going to use is what you just demarcated, well, then we're going to need them to shred the founding documents of this country, and let's start over.
I can definitely understand that. And when you look, but what I'm saying is, when we go back to certain levels, certain times, you know, the reality of this is we weren't pushing liberty that damn hard for a long time. And even if we were, you're right. We weren't. Mm-hmm. We looked at you as 3/5 of a human, and you weren't treated that way. Now, obviously, we've tried to correct that. But ultimately, the question still has to be. I mean, because you can't start over. The truth of this is, even the ugly histories that any of us have, we cannot, this is not a video game. We cannot hit reset. Right. But ultimately, why should I pay you anything when I believe you have the same opportunities as me? Why should I pay you anything because you got your feelings hurt or you believe that you were treated wrong?
Yeah, but here's the thing. We're not asking for you to pay. We're not coming to JB Gunner TV and saying, JB Gunner, you owe us reparations. What we're saying is that the wealth of this country was built off of the blacks of slaves, and then that wealth was maldistributed to groups of people who didn't deserve it, because prior to Immigration and Naturalization Act, I think of 1790, majority of white people were not, there wasn't that many white people here. They flooded white people. Yeah. They flooded America with European peasants, and then they gave those European peasants an economic base. This is how the West was won and all that. This is what happened. And so when they did that, that automatically put us at the bottom of the socioeconomic rung, and that's what put us in a minority caste. That's what put us in a minority caste. See, so this is what I'm saying. They've consistently done things that would keep us from getting to a certain point as a collective and as a group of people. They've locked us out of industries. Look, the American middle class, the white American middle class, they didn't just magically one day decided that they were going to do this and pull themselves up by their bootstraps. The white American middle class is a government creation through these government programs that was initiated with the New Deal. Early on, you mentioned projects earlier. Early on, public housing and projects were for white people. Many white people were just as broke as black people. The way these people amassed all of this wealth and this middle class status was through the programs that was implemented in the late 30s through the 40s that gave you the American middle class idealism of the 1950s, while at the same time locking out black people, locking them out from all of the industries, from the automobile industry, which was major at that time, from all these different manufacturing jobs, and many of the jobs that they could get were menial jobs that didn't pay any real money. And so this is just the history and the legacy. And so what you can't do now is come back and blame black people for being born in a continuum that has them oriented at the bottom of the socioeconomic spectrum. It's a mass redistribution of wealth that has taken place in this country. The top 1%. Yep. Own and hoard all of the resources, and then they trickle it down. And but by the time it gets to us, there's nothing left.
Well, and I understand that. And I guess what I'm going to say to you is this: even if that was the case, my question is going to be, why whine about it? Ultimately, okay, fine. People are being unfair. They're not giving you a piece of their pie. They're not giving you what you feel owed. You feel you're owed. And here's the truth. It's never going to happen. White people will never hand over reparations. We will go to war first. That is an absolute fact. Number two, another thing I just kind of want to throw in out there. Okay. there is a certain path that human beings take. For you know, you start, if everybody does things the typical, well, quote unquote, right way, you go to school, you then go to college, you then get a career, you then get married, you then have kids, typically you'll have a pretty solid lifestyle. Now, so in that path of getting things the way they should be, my question is going to be, where do you feel that Black people are cut off? Because the same Pell Grant that I got, the same student loans that I got, you can get. And then number two, when I failed at certain things, I then came back and began a long time ago being a entrepreneur and creator, starting off with just podcasts and then became a YouTuber 12 years ago. And I can tell you that 7 out of them 12 years, I made 6 figures, just someone with a crackhead as a mother on my own with teardrops on my face and 3 tattoos. And now I live very, very comfortably in a suburban area. I don't believe I got those things because I was white at all. Because me and you have the same opportunity to get to college, and we also have the same opportunity to get the knowledge and come on here on YouTube and generate our own wealth. So ultimately, I'm struggling to understand where's the oppressive measures that hold people down? Why can't they do what I did? And ultimately, even if it was the case, almost I guess I gotta say this, and I'm not trying to come off as confrontational, but the what you're gonna do about it question pops up in my head. Like I understand there's a lot of whining. I'm not saying from you particularly. I'm saying in general, white people ain't giving us this, white people ain't giving us that. And then then when we strike back and kill you for being an annoyance and a nuisance, then we're being bad and we're killing unarmed blacks and all of this. No, we're telling you right off the jump, we're not giving you anything. And the more you talk about it and the more you annoy us, the more of you that's going to die. And you still are just crying. So my question is going to be, number one, why couldn't they do what I did? And then number two, what are Black people going to do about it if they feel so beaten down? Let's go.
You said, what are they going to do about it? Well, yeah. one thing that we're going to do is we're going to use our, our economic dollars to stymie the system, to disrupt the system. Same thing with the political aspect. My personal philosophy is if they take one, then you take 10. And so you can take that for what it's worth. That's my personal philosophy and belief. If someone takes one of mine, then I'm going to take 10 of theirs.
That's a good strategy, because it's the only way blacks could win. Since it's 7-0.
Right. The larger thing here is is that the powers that be, they don't want that. So it's something that we're going to keep striving for through the political sphere, the economic avenues and those things. Now, as far as, what you just mentioned about how you got yourself to a certain position, look, there are brothers and sisters who do that every day in American life, in American society. I live a pretty comfortable life. And I can say, yes, it's my decision making, but also too, I've understood ways that I've been disadvantaged because I'm black, because I'm a black man, the way I might be perceived. You mentioned that earlier, talking about the stereotypes, the way that we're perceived in media. Yeah. And so there are ways that I've been disadvantaged. And this is, a critical race theory, these things that even though something cannot be racist or racial in its creation or its implementation, the outcome will still be racialized. And the reason why the outcome is still racialized is because the larger societal, economic, and political context of America, as we know it and as we have known it, is racialized. Like if you look at America as opposed to other European countries, and they have their issues with entitlements and with social programs, but it's not as stigmatized as it is here. And the reason why it's not as stigmatized there as it is here is because those societies are homogeneous. See, there is no racial class and caste system that exists in those countries. So they're much more lax when it comes to social programs and these things. That's not true for America. For America, they've always had to contend with what we know of as the Negro problem. And the Negro problem has been treated as a political football. Now, earlier you mentioned that you were a conservative. And what I find hilarious about neoconservatives is that they're nothing more than liberals calling other liberals liberal. How do you account for that? Because conservatives aren't really conservative. They're really what it is. They have racial ambivalence to equality for Black people in American society. That's how they came into being.
Now, well, I'm struggling to understand what you mean, conservatives or not conservative, but I will say this. Because the thing about it is, majority of the people that I know, particularly conservatives, particularly white conservatives, even Black conservatives, right, they rarely even discuss race. They're not looking to hold anyone down. They don't care. Right. But even if they were, we believe totally in your freedom to do so. For instance, like I'm going to give you an example, a Black barbershop or a soul food restaurant. Mm-hmm. If you look at me and say, a white dude don't know how to cook soul food, or even if you're stereotyping and just, you know, being a complete, you know, jerk, that white dude don't know how to cut Black hair, you know, to us, you're entitled to that, right? And even if, you know, the stigma that when it comes to us conservatives, that it's racially motivated exists, if you yourself say that whites are the dominant culture, the dominant resource holders, then just to be honest, then shouldn't we dictate where the resources go? And if we decide, no Blacks are getting this, isn't that self-preservation? Because here's the thing, like I said, I just told you how us whites actually don't have these conversations. We don't talk racially. We're typically talking about something completely different. However, on your end, I did my research, and you're very racially motivated. A good portion of the conversations you have stem around race. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing. I'm just saying that for us, it's not as big as you think. So the oppression of others really isn't something that takes into consideration. But even if we were to decide we want to preserve us white people, would that be, I mean, really, why is that a problem? What if we say we're going to keep all this for us? I'm sorry, America is not working for you. This is ours. We own everything. We have everything. We're the dominant culture, as you just said. What if we decided we're not giving anymore? It's that simple. If you don't like it, I'm going to say the thing that everybody's going to say is racist. If you don't like it, we'll get you a plane ticket out of here, but we're not going to give you anymore. What if we say that?
Well, it's the reason why they have acquiesced on certain things, certain concessions, is because that's unsustainable, and the policymakers and the governmental agencies and everything understand that it's unsustainable. Yeah. You see, when you what they say, pressure busts pipes. And so what you do is you turn that subjugated group into a powder keg in your own home, if you do that. Right. You see, so that's not even an adequate strategy for continuity of government.
Ready to go. He just, that Obama internet will get you every time. That Obama internet will get you every time. You cannot, listen, brother. I'm just fucking with you, by the way, if you're listening. You cannot honestly tether your there you go.
Yeah. It does that every
you can't be tethering your computer to your Obama phone, brother. No, I'm sorry.
But like I was saying, you turn those people
Damn. The white man's silencing him. He's getting shut down. Help. Help. God. He's a good guy, man. This guy's a good guy. Actually, I mean, we disagree on everything almost, but I have to give him credit. He is an awesome guy to talk to, at least. I don't dislike him. This is a good conversation.
I don't know why. Normally, it just does that one time. Hold on. Let me turn my. Okay, I see. Yeah, anyway, like I was saying, yeah, because then you turn those people into a powder keg in your own home. Now, just to deal with the racial aspect of everything, are you familiar with the Kerner Commission?
No.
Perhaps you should read that because, you know, during the time of this great civil unrest, you know, all these different riots and things were going on in the mid to late 60s. And, you know, in black communities, the urban area, there was a commission that was put together to find out why this was happening, what was going on. And the basic conclusion they came to is because we're racist. Now, that's not me. That's the Kerner Commission who said that. They're the ones who said, well, the reason why these people are acting like this is because we're racist and we treat them like shit because we're racist. You see? And so that's what's going to happen. Like if you take that avenue, but you know, that's basically what it is. But again, the neoconservatives aren't really conservative. They're liberal. They're liberals who became disaffected with the Great Society legislation and the political radicalism that was going on from their vantage point, because you know, black people marching, having civil rights and these different things, to them that was radical. You see, so that is the basis, the very foundation for neoconservatism as we know it. That's what neoconservatism is. But they're very much liberal. They don't believe in smaller government. They don't believe in non-interventionist government. They go around nation building, policing the world, acting as the moral authority for the planet when nothing could be further from the truth. If you look at America's,
are you talking about Republicans or conservatives? Because there is a, because for instance, I'm a conservative libertarian, bro. I mean, like, I understand a lot of people think it's just the same as liberals are not the same as Democrats or progressives. I just wanted to throw that in there, man.
I understand. But America, if you look at the money that America gives out to these puppet dictators in the form of foreign aid. But we never hear conservatives, neocons talk about that. Why is that? Why isn't that stigmatized as much as paying and repairing black society for the evils that have been done against it?
Repeat that again. I didn't hear that first half of that, the first part.
I said why isn't foreign aid to these puppet dictators as demonized and vilified as paying reparations to black people who have been systemically, disadvantaged economically? Why is that?
Actually, I actually am against foreign aid and foreign entanglements of any kind, actually.
Right.
Okay. However, remember, I'm libertarians. Most of us, I don't want to help fund anyone. However, my thing here is that logic would say that they're getting more out of that expenditure than they are of giving black people reparations. Like, I want you to understand, there's nothing us white people that's in it for us.
Mm-hmm.
To give you reparations harms us. It does not help us.
Does it harm? Help me understand the logic. How does it harm you?
Well, what is the number that you, because remember, we're a country that's $22 trillion in debt. Right. What is the number that you believe reparations would cost?
I would say probably anywhere from $1 trillion to $2 trillion.
Okay. Well, some of the numbers I've seen is about $14 trillion. And this is from people that broke down what they believe reparations was. They added inflation. If it was just $1 trillion, I'm sure this reparation thing would have been handled a long time ago. You know, I'm going to be honest. I don't think we would even still be having this discussion in 2019 if the debate was really just $1 trillion, or even two. You know, I think the numbers need to, there's things that need to be discussed. Now, I'm against any reparations at all. However, for it to even be on the table for discussion, we have to decide who's going to get it from who, how much it's going to be, and then how we're going to take and then distribute. Those are very difficult questions to get to. Number one, just making that determination would probably take decades. Honestly, I just don't. Go ahead.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I don't think it would be that that hard of an effort. And look, America has paid reparations to other groups that they've committed evils against. We're talking about the Japanese internment. Yes. They got reparations. Native Americans, they got a form of reparations and those different things. You see, so I think what it is they just lack the political will. And black people haven't been forceful enough in fomenting that.
Well, that I'm actually going to add to that for you. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to add to your case on that. It could just be because we don't like you. You know what I'm saying? You got to take that into consideration that we maybe we just like the Japanese better. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm not. I know that sounds funny the way it's coming out, but in reality. At some point in time, yes, if we paid reparations to everyone else and we're looking at you and saying, no, you have to look at like, and I'll give you an example of the, we'll just say loose woman instead, loose woman that banged every guy in your school. And maybe she looked at you and was like, yeah, but not you. You know what I'm saying? Right. At some point, you got to look in the mirror and say, how come everybody else got it but me? Well, there's something about you that may just make us mad. It may just make us say, you know what? No, we're going to keep the boot on the neck. We'd rather not. And so, yeah, we can sit and say that's wrong, that's bad. I'm not saying I dislike you or I like the Japanese more than you by any means. Right. But the people that make these decisions may be saying that. And sometimes you just got to accept it or go to war.
Right. I understand what you're saying on that point. We've been on for an hour. I'm going to end it here because I have to get ready for work and stuff like that. So, yeah, but I appreciate you coming by and having a civil conversation, civil discussion.
Anytime.
I think it was fruitful. It went well. So I appreciate you.
No problem. Anytime, brother. I appreciate you.
All right.
Like you.
Yeah. So y'all see how certain people think. it's just funny. It's funny to me how they refuse to acknowledge certain truths about the way this country is organized and situated, especially along the socioeconomics, the redistribution of wealth. Ronald Reagan was pivotal in that redistribution of wealth, redistributing the wealth from the working class up to the top 1%. And then what they did, they gave all this credit, created this credit economy, credit cards, financing vehicles, financing homes, when they don't really, they don't really have it like that either. So they at the end of it all, they're being duped too. This is why they asses was acting a fucking mess when in 2008 during that economic downturn, most of the people who lost their money was them. They do it. They robbed their 401k coffers, took the money and just ran off with it. See, and but they're willing to let that slide so long as they can engage in this psychological privilege of being white and somehow being better than black people. Not looking at the larger context in which black people exist in, especially in these urban areas. You know, how a lot of that is what's driving the behaviors that we see, being degenerate, being criminal is not endemic to black manhood or black womanhood. These are people in an economic situation and in an urban environment where there isn't a lot of opportunities. If you go and look at the unemployment rates in a lot of these areas, it's through the roof, especially for black men. We're talking double digit unemployment. See, there's a difference between unemployment and joblessness. So, you know, I just wanted to, you know, give them a little work. I ain't wanted to get, you know, go too deep with it, too deep in the weeds with it, because he probably wouldn't understand a lot of the stuff. And so that's just basically what it is. I'm glad y'all enjoyed it. Like, share, and subscribe. I'm about to get off here because I got to get ready for work. But y'all know what it is. Make Black America great again or die trying. And know what? I'm going to let something play before I go. Tell me what y'all think about it. I got something I'm working on. So I'm going to let it play. And y'all just leave y'all comments in the comment section. Trying to get this right. Hold on, Queens.
Why do we fall? We are men. Perhaps the greatest question that has plagued our existence is, why do we fall? The greatest philosophers have pondered this question, only to conclude that its eventuality is inevitable. To err is human. To fail is standard. Failure is the greatest qualifier of the human experience. For in its occurrence, we learn. We learn about the world, ourselves, and the nature of triumph. See, failure tests our mettle, stretches our limits, and broadens our horizons. Without the agony of defeat, how can we fully appreciate the sweetness of victory, the satisfaction of accomplishment? See, the mountaintop is merely symbolic of our journey. Our stumbles, falls, and setbacks remain in the obscureness of the valleys and shadows. We fall for one very simple reason. We fall for instruction. We fall to learn how to stand and persevere when our mind, body, and soul has reached its breaking point. We learn to dig deep, and with every fiber of our being, we soldier on. So let us rejoice in the failure of effort, for therein lies immense understanding. And as the phoenix arises from the ashes, so do we arise from the flames of adversity, renewed, reinvigorated, and refined, as gold is refined within the crucible of piercing. Though the countenance of our visages may be marked with the ugliness of traumas long past, break forth with rejoicing as despair yields to healing humility. Therefore, let us not judge one another by the high standards we set, but rather by the depths in which we fall. We fall to become who we are. We fall to become great. We fall to become men. We fall. We fall to become who we are destined to be, and we fall simply.